Ellington, and for the final time, Django Reinhardt. I hope you have a beautiful day. You are tuned to Northern Community Radio 91.7 KAXE in Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9.
Coming up next, it's Minnesota Mixtape with Malachi Coons. This is Independent 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. Telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Find playlists, podcasts, and more at KEXE.org.
Welcome to Minnesota Mixtape, a weekly spotlight on the Minnesota music scene. I'm your host, Malachi Coons. We are covering a lot of genres on the show today. Coming up, Minnesota-made funk, jazz, folk, gospel, pop, rock, indie, soul, jazz, shoegaze, new wave, hip-hop, and beyond. It's Minnesota Mixtape, made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and produced at KAXE. An independent and people-powered community radio station broadcasting from the north bank of the Mississippi River. We're going to begin today in 2005 with indie blog darlings Tapes and Tapes and one from their debut album, The Loon. Brought to life by wonderful country guitar, here is Insister.
Kelly is the Lord. business. Oh, what you're running away from. There's no place that won't get you. Carry it round and round. You never put it down. I don't know which way you wanna go, but you look at me for directions. What do you see?
Off of their debut setlist EP, that is Minneapolis band Soulflower with Passion. Led by vocalist and bassist Anaya Elamine, the soul rock and pop fusing group are one to watch in Minnesota music. I'm Malachi Coons, and you are listening to Minnesota Mixtape. Alan Sparhawk, backed by Trampled by Turtles, is a collaboration between two giants of Duluth music and a musical expression of the unimaginable pain that comes from losing a loved one. At many moments, the album will have you in tears, but at times, hope shines through, like Too High, showcasing Sparhawk songwriting and the chamber folk backing of the Bluegrass String Band. Take a listen here on Minnesota Mixtape.
skies, baby, I'm belly, sand on the shore, here in the waters that I adore. Reindeer, reindeer, run, how I wish to join your fun. Staying warm with your hollow fern, sticking close to the heart of the herd. Highs a mountain, cars going by, visions, flashlight comes from the sky. Winter's long and oh so weary. Through the eyes of the earth we can see clearly.
Incredible voice and life lessons from squirrels, otters, reindeer, and loons are all Charlotte Montgomery needs to make a truly beautiful song. That is Animal Song for Dennis from her 2017 album, Lonesome Ghost of Me. Minnesota Mixtape continues right after this with some Around the World in a Day Prince.
Should give as you are able, because the need is immediate.
Longtime KAXE contributor and Minnesota Star Tribune columnist Aaron Brown, we talked about recent cuts to public media.
It's the people here who make it go. If you want a nice, independent, completely northern Minnesota media source that isn't beholden to anybody else, you have to be willing to put in a little bit of money. This is the time. This is the moment when we have to make decisions about what really is important to our community and to ourselves.
I'm Jennifer Barr. Give right now at KAXC.org. Thank you for your support.
KAXC went on the air in 1976. This year, we lost federal funding like all of public media, but you have come forward. You have told us that KAXC matters. We're grateful for all of you, and especially for the folks that have been here from the beginning, people like Michael Goldberg and Gail Addison.
You know, for me and Gail, it's really been two things, a fabulous music education, of all the music that we never imagined or knew anything about, and we're learning still every week. And then the other thing, of course, is that everybody we know through KAXE.
Yeah, we've made a lot of decisions in our life based on having access to this radio station. An extremely rare opportunity to learn a new skill and to share your love of music and to meet so many people through this station as well.
Support KAXE now. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234.
You're listening to Minnesota Mixtape on KAXE, People Powered Radio. Thanks for listening today. We receive support from the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community, working with their friends and neighbors with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information at coleranebank.com, member FDIC. Now, a message paid for by the Minnesota Department of Health. Sometimes you just need to talk about it, but it can be hard to find someone who really listens. That's why there's 988, the support that meets you where you are. Confidential and staffed by trained folks who want to help you when you need someone to talk to. Call or text 988 or chat online at 988lifeline.org. Now time for more Minnesota Mixtape with Malachi Coons. You can hear it every Friday at 10 a.m. and Saturdays at 3. You're listening to Minnesota Mixtape on KAXE. I'm Kari Hedlund. Thanks for listening this afternoon. Programming is supported in part by the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. A lot has changed in the past year. The speed limit has not. Speeders can expect to be stopped. Please slow down. Extra speed patrols now on Minnesota roads. And support comes from Thrive Up North, sharing the stories of a welcoming community of people who've chosen to make Itasca County their new home. Promoting all the area has to offer, including natural amenities and jobs and healthcare, manufacturing, and more. Offering an incentive package to help you with your move to the area. Learn more at thriveupnorth.com. Coming up at 4 o'clock today, Sarah is your host for On the River. And at 7 o'clock, it's Green Cheese Trivia, 2 hours of live trivia hosted by Mike Berry. And at 9 o'clock, Z McQueen is bringing us some ambient electronica music for KAXE After Dark.
like a fish in the sea all the time. But if that's what it takes to be free, I don't mind. Still moving me. Still moving me. It's hard to explain how I feel. It won't go in words, but I know that it's real. I can be moving or I can be still. But still moving me. Still moving me. La 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 la. It's hard to explain how I feel. It won't go in words, but I know that it's real. I can be moving or I can be still. But still moving to me. Still moving to me.
Good morning. It is just before 5 o'clock. You're listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota. You can join us at kaxe.org. I'm Jennifer Barr. Coming up next, Milk Street Radio, 6 o'clock on the media and 7 o'clock, weekend edition news from National Public Radio. Partly sunny today, high 62 to 67, breezy northwest winds. Our lows tonight in the upper 40s, and tomorrow a mix of clouds and sun, highs 59 to 64, winds from the northwest gusting up to 25 miles per hour. Grand Rapids Riverfest is Saturday, September 6th. We are excited to welcome Courtney Barnett, Margot Price, Jeremy Albino, and Alan Sparhawk. Find tickets and more information at grandrapidsriverfest.com. It's time now for Milk Street Radio.
I'm Christopher Kimball from Milk Street Radio. If you get off the plane in Athens, you're likely to find souvlaki, moussaka, spanakopita, but what's for breakfast?
Well, if you ask the average Greek, he will tell you Greek breakfast is probably coffee and a cigarette.
An insider's guide to eating just like a Greek. That's coming up this week on Milk Street Radio from PRX. I'm Christopher Kimball, and this is Milk Street Radio. Today, we settle a great debate. Are bone-in steaks a scam?
You know, a lot of times when you hear chefs on TV talking about cooking a piece of meat, they're always saying, hey, bone-in, it adds a lot more flavor. So I really want to know the truth about that.
Meathead Goldwyn is back to set the record straight.
The bone is coated with calcium, and calcium has no flavor. But it is going to alter the cooking dynamics. It's like a heat shield. It's like on the space shuttle.
But maybe there's one exception.
I gotta say, I do like chewing on the bones.
Meathead's Masterclass. That's coming up next on Milk Street Radio from PRX after the news.
Green Cheese listeners know how important it is to support stations like KAXE KBXE.
Anyone who can, be sure to donate, because as all of us know, we listen to this, Green Cheese and all the other programming on the stations. We really, really love it and don't want anything to happen to it. So it's really important to give what you can.
One thing I wanted to do is I wanted to talk to everybody out there. Radio is important when it's unique and it's interesting and it's local, and given your current funding situation, everybody out there should be doing something about that, no matter how little it is. If everybody did something, it makes a tremendous difference. Think about Saturday nights with no green cheese. That sounds terrible.
It would be so boring.
This is the queen, and I'm going to make an edict. All cheeses, get your checkbooks out and send in some money to our favorite station and show, and my check will be in the mail tomorrow.
Donate now at KAXE.org.
This is Milk Street Radio from PRX. I'm your host, Christopher Kimball. Noor Mourad grew up in Bahrain, an archipelago in the Persian Gulf, known as
the Land of a Million Palm Trees.
Those palm trees grow dates that Noor likes to dunk in tahini. She also loves stewed lamb and fenugreek seeds, and above all else, black limes.
I've wanted more than anything to just kind of spread the black lime love around the world.
We'll explore the flavors of Gulf cooking with Noor, but first we're heading to Athens for an insider's food tour of Greece. Carolina Doriti is a Greek chef and tour guide, and she joins me now. Carolina, welcome to Milk Street.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So the first question I have is, I take the red eye from Boston, I get into Athens at 6 or 7 in the morning. What about breakfast?
Well, if you ask the average Greek, he will tell you Greek breakfast is probably coffee and a cigarette.
Right. <that's what>
But I think pies are very popular for breakfast here. And there are many, many different types of pies in Greece, like a warm, sweet bougata pie, for instance, which is filled with a milk custard and topped with powdered sugar and cinnamon. And then we've got Greek yogurt, of course, which is typically served with honey and walnuts.
okay, I'm going to walk around Athens now. And one of the first questions I always have is, what about the street food? So what are the options in Athens, and what do you recommend?
Of course, there's souvlaki, which is the famous Greek street food. Or then they've got gyros, which is like layered slices of pork, actually, in Greece, and not lamb, seasoned very nicely, and then slow-cooked on a vertical rotisserie until it's almost caramelized on the outside, and then it's nicely and thinly shaved when it's ready.
Authentically in Athens, if you have it wrapped in pita bread, what would they put with it as well? Anything?
Well, the old school souvlaki places, which are my favorite, they will put some sliced tomato and some chopped parsley, onions, red onions, which in Greece are very sweet and crispy, and either yogurt or some tzatziki, which is yogurt mixed with garlic and grated cucumber.
So I walk into a restaurant. How do I navigate the menu? Like, what are some of the things I should be aware of? What are some of the things I should watch out for, etc.?
Well, first of all, usually in Greece, most people speak English. So the best way, I think, is to talk to the waiter and get their advice, because there might be things that you would never understand them in the menu to order them.
Give me an example of that.
Like green beans. It might say green beans and you will have, I don't know, you will probably imagine boiled green beans. But this is a stew that is cooked in olive oil and tomato and carrots and potatoes, and it's fantastic when the beans are in season and they're fresh. Or you may read in a menu fava, and it will have nothing to do with fava bean. It will be a yellow creamy paste, which is made of a type of yellow split pea, which is very traditional in Greece.
These are great. Okay, keep going. I like this list.
Yeah, so then you might also read fricassé, which is something you might be familiar with from the French cuisine. But Greek fricassé is completely different. It's a type of meat, usually lamb, goat, pork, chicken, cooked with seasonal greens, often foraged greens, or it can be greens like lettuce and chard. And then you finish it off with an egg and lemon sauce. Fantastic dish. And then we've got some recipes with intestines, such as kokoretsi, for instance. So in Greece, kokoretsi is usually liver and other offal wrapped with intestines and then slow cooked, ideally over charcoal while it rotates. And then this is thinly sliced. But when this is done properly, and most people prefer to use just liver inside the intestines, and they season it very well with oregano, so it's quite aromatic. It's really, really good, I think.
Let's talk about ouzo. So is this a drink like a pastis or something you might have to develop your appetite before dinner? Is it something you drink after dinner? Or is it something that's strictly had with food?
You can have it before dinner, but most Greeks, the moment they put the first drop of alcohol in their mouth, they want something to eat along. So ouzo is the classic drink we pair seafood in Greece. And there are restaurants called ouzeri, and these restaurants most commonly focus on seafood.
Why ouzo pairing with seafood?
Because it cleanses your palate, and it pairs fishy flavors, like strong fishy flavors, like even, you know, like mackerel and, you know, anchovies and sardines. It pairs really well with them.
So what about the higher end restaurants in Greece? What are their takes on traditional recipes?
There are many ways to see how you can modernize a recipe or take a different turn. I mean, some may want to deconstruct it. In my opinion, Greek cuisine is very fashionable in its traditional old-school form because it's a very sustainable cuisine. And it's a very seasonal cuisine. And I think that naturally it really represents the, you know, the big trends of cooking at the moment.
So I get off the plane and you meet me and you say to me, look, whatever else you get out of this trip, here are the three things you should never do when you're in Athens.
Well, eat near the Acropolis or drink. Yeah, do not eat near the Acropolis. do not ask your hotel where to eat. And do not ask a taxi driver where to eat.
Now, the taxi driver is going to send you to his brother's place or something?
To his cousin.
His cousin, yeah, of course. Carolina, thank you so much. Now I have my list. I need to go to Athens.
I hope you call me when you're here.
I definitely am calling you.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Carolina Doriti. She's a chef, also bureau chief for Culinary Backstreets Athens. Her upcoming cookbook is The Greek Islands Cookbook. Now it's time to answer your barbecue and grilling questions with our special guest co-host, Meathead Goldwyn. Meathead is the founder of AmazingRibs.com, also author of Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. Hey, Meathead, what's going on?
Hello, Christopher. It's good to be back with you.
We talked about marinating many times, and you know that I have made a career about saying marinating doesn't work. But we did find, I don't know if you comment on this, that with chicken, sometimes pork, a yogurt marinade seemed to actually work. It can't be a super thick piece of meat. But there's something in a dairy product, a yogurt, that seemed to actually penetrate into the, let's say, a chicken skewer, for example.
Yes.
I noticed that other marinades just don't get inside, but why yogurt?
I think it's primarily the acidity. Acid does work on protein, and it can soften it. In fact, if you marinate something in an acid too long, it will make the skin or the surface mushy. Now, of course, marinating in yogurt is an old Indian tradition. I mean, all your tandooris. But I've been playing a lot with pickle brine, which is the same thing. It's a high acid. It does penetrate. Now, I've been with you for years. I've been preaching that marinades are a surface treatment. They don't penetrate. They don't get deep into the meat. They don't alter the center of the flavor. But the acidity is a distinct effect, and it works primarily on the surface. And it can actually, I think, aid the crisping of chicken skin.
I just want to say publicly, this is an exception to the Kimball rule. I got to look and just... Okay, let's take some calls.
Welcome to Milk Street. Who's calling?
This is Bill from Scottsdale.
So how can we help you today?
My question is kind of three parts, and they're all kind of interrelated. So, you know, a lot of times when you hear chefs on TV talking about cooking a piece of meat, they're always saying, hey, bone in, it adds a lot more flavor. So I really want to know the truth about that, if bone in makes it better and why. And then the second question is a standing rib roast. What's the best way to cook it? And the third question is a tomahawk steak, is it really worth the bucks? Is it really a viable piece of meat? I'd love to hear your opinions on that. Thank you.
These are good questions. First of all, the bone is coated with calcium, and calcium has no flavor. Now, the interior of the bone has lots of flavor. There's fat, and the stuff that makes blood is down in there. So if you're going to make a stew, say with short ribs, and throw them into a stew where there's wine and water and stuff, they will extract flavor from the interior of the bone. But if you're cooking on a grill or in a pan or in your oven, that's dry cooking. And there's nothing going to get the flavor out of the marrow. All you've got is the calcium. Now, the calcium is not going to affect the flavor of the meat directly, but it is going to alter the cooking dynamics. That is to say, it's like a heat shield. It's like on the space shuttle. It's going to block heat from entering the meat. And if you've ever sat down with a bone-in ribeye, you know the meat closer to the bone is a little less cooked. It's more rare than it is on the other side. What's the old song? The closer to the bone, the sweeter the meat. That's it.
It's going to alter the heating dynamics of the meat, and so you'll have one side more cooked and one side less cooked. So I take the bone off, and I save the bone, and I use it for making stock. And this way, I get the meat cooked evenly all around. And I do the same thing for a prime rib. Now, you asked about a standing rib roast.
Right.
That slab of ribs is going to block heat from coming in. And I want the meat to cook evenly on all sides. So I cut that slab off, and that slab is a meal. I mean, that's a meal for two. It's marvelous, and I'll grill or smoke that. And then I'll cook the rib roast just the meat, and I'll take a lot of the fat off of there too, and it's just fantastic. And that's called the eye of the ribeye. So I get the bones out of the way. I think they alter the heating physics of the whole thing. And then your question on tomahawk steaks. Tomahawk steak is just a bone-in ribeye, but they've left the whole rib. Usually it's just a portion of the rib from the back, but they've left the side of the, and you're paying for that bone. It is cool. Let's face it. It is just very cool. It's impressive, but I don't think it has any impact on flavor.
Unless you marinate it for 30 days in bourbon.
Now, I got to say.
And then it's really good.
I got to say, I do like chewing on the bones. So if I do cook it with bone in, I do get pleasure from chewing on the bone.
That's great. So, you know, based on what you're telling me, too, talking about the heat shield, especially with the tomahawk, that's why I think I've always been disappointed with those steaks, because I find them not as tender as a regular ribeye. And the cooking on, again, to your point, is very uneven. And I think your explanation really helps me understand the whole thing. So that was excellent. Thank you.
Bill, thanks so much for calling.
Okay. And thanks so much for taking my call, and all the best to both of you.
Good luck.
Take care. This is Mill Street Radio. Before your next barbecue, give us a ring, 855-426-9843. One more time, 855-426-9843. Or email us at questions@milkstreetradio.com.
Welcome to Milk Street. Who's calling?
Hi, my name's Laura.
And how can we help you today?
I was wondering if you guys had any advice on cooking rabbit on the grill.
Well, I'm not a hunter. I have cooked rabbit that people have brought me, but I think I'm going to defer to the infinite wisdom of Christopher Kimball, who is a hunter.
I do hunt rabbit. So the back strap, the loin, has to be cooked totally differently than the legs, the back legs. So the back strap, just like you would with venison, is like a tenderloin, right? You cook tenderloin very quickly over high heat, and that's a few minutes, right? It's done. The legs, however, need to be low and slow. So you essentially barbecue them, right? Or just put them in a low oven or braise them over low temperature, because they're going to take time to break down, and they're much tougher because they obviously, the muscles are well developed. So you just have to separate those two things.
Christopher, do you brine or do you use a special rub or any kind of preparation in advance?
I find that what I like to do with the legs is a little bit of liquid in the pot, you know, a cup and a half, a braise, put it in a low oven and let it cook in like a 275 oven or something like that. I find that to be the best. But you can't cook it fast. You can't grill it. Just not going to be good.
Can they be confit?
Yes, absolutely. And that's why you do duck confit. Yeah, cook it in oil, you know, for 2 or 3 hours submerged. That's fabulous. Absolutely delicious. Matter of fact, that's probably the best way to cook a rabbit leg. Yeah,
oh.
Confit. Yeah, that's a good idea.
So you wouldn't spatchcock it and cook it like a chicken then?
Do you want to eat it when you're done? Or or is this for display purposes? No. Well, let me ask Laura.
I can verify this is a bad idea.
Yeah. So Laura, how have you cooked rabbit, and what's worked and what hasn't?
I tried to cook it a lot like chicken, and I have failed. It's right. Not great that way. No. So your suggestion of splitting up the rabbit has been what I've started to do when I process them.
Mm-hmm.
And so putting my back straps all together and then right. The legs all together. I haven't figured out a good way to barbecue it.
No. One thing I do when I get back from hunting is I will obviously field dress it, skin it, cut it into the pieces, and then I will put it in salted water overnight. And that cleans it up, but also essentially is a brine. It's a very weak brine. And I find that does help too. But that's what I always do in a cool spot. If it's in November, in the barn or whatever is fine, or in the refrigerator, just let it sit overnight in salted water.
For 1 gallon of water, how much salt would you have in that when you make that weak brine?
The usual formula for brine is 1 cup of regular table salt per gallon. Is that right, Meathead?
Roughly, you want somewhere in the 3 to 6% range, yeah. Which is, you got to do the math.
So I would do half of that probably for this, because it's going to sit there overnight. And it just is, it cleans up the meat, and then you also get some benefit because it's going to hold on to water longer when you cook it.
Okay. I actually have one more question, if you guys are willing to take it.
Sure.
I cook every day, but sometimes I forget to take my meat out of the freezer. And so I'm wondering about grilling from frozen.
We just did this at Milk Street. You can take a frozen steak. I do reverse sear method. I put it in a 250 mm-hmm. or a 300 oven for maybe 15 or 20 minutes, get the internal temperature up to like 90, 95, and then finish it on the grill or in a skillet. And it turns out it cooked in the same amount of time as a refrigerated steak. So I don't understand why that's true. But this is an inch and a half thick steak. It worked just fine. So you can cook a frozen steak as long as you do the reverse sear.
And so I just use the same principles that I use yeah. when I forget and I want to cook it inside.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the concept of reverse sear?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Basically, you warm it at a low temperature.
Right.
And that cooks the interior evenly from edge to edge. And then you sear it afterwards. Right. And up till now, or up till recently, almost all your cookbooks told you to sear it first
right.
and then pop it in the oven. And nowadays, conventional wisdom, and I've been teaching this for years, is to reverse sear. And the results are you get a much more even interior temperature and gorgeous exterior crust. So, great way to go.
There we
all
are.
Right. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for calling. Take care.
Really appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
This is Mill Street Radio. If you're having a grill emergency, give us a ring anytime, 855-426-9843. That's 855-426-9843. Or send us an email at questions@milkstreetradio.com. Welcome to Milk Street. Who's calling?
Hi, Chris. This is Jorge.
Hey, how are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Los Angeles, California.
Good place. How can we help you?
One of my favorite dishes at restaurants is wood-fired fish. But every time I've tried to recreate the dish on my grill, it's really been a disaster. My fish fillet or whole fish inevitably becomes a mess. And I really need help. I love this dish.
Well, I can help you. I was in Mexico in Nayarit a year or two ago, and we went fishing in the morning, and then in the evening we went to Bar Fernando. And they did a fish preparation, which